good afternoon. I want to welcome our listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located on Dryden Road at 2031 Dryden, right across from DP&L. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914. We'd be glad to sit down and talk with you about any of your firearms-related interests or needs. Keep in mind that we have a variety of training courses that we're offering. Just an idea of some of the upcoming courses we have. On June 4th, we have another session of our First Shots class, June 4th from 4 to 7 p.m. First Shots is designed specifically for people who have little exposure or absolutely no exposure to firearms, and they come in for a three-hour session, and we go over firearm safety, range safety, basic nomenclature, parts of a gun, functional operation of a gun. Then you get to go out on the range and have a good time under the direct supervision of some of our trained firearms instructors, and you shoot 50 rounds, and then we sit down in the classroom toward the last half hour and talk about ways you can enjoy the shooting sports. In addition, we have our concealed carry class coming up, our weekday session. It'll be June 13th through the 16th from 5:30 to 9:30. That's June 13th through the 16th, 5:30 to 9:30. If you're interested in that class.
That's in the evening.
Right. I'm sorry, 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. That's right. It's our weekday class, but it's we run alternate months, weekends, Saturday, Sunday, then weekdays, Monday through Thursday, and the weekday classes run 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. In addition, I just want to let our listeners know that we've just received a pretty good shipment of Crossbreed Super Tuck holsters. They've sent us about 2.5 dozen different variety of holsters, so the chances are good that we're going to have something that you might be interested in. The Super Tuck is kind of taking the market by storm. It's one of the nicest concealable holsters that you can get. It's made of very good quality materials, and they put a lifetime guarantee on the product. So it's a great option for those who are looking for a way to conceal the firearm, particularly going into the summer months. In addition, I just want to tell you to be on the watch. Just the last couple of days, I talked to some people at a company called Lockdown for some safe accessories. One of the things people have asked me about is, you get a safe to store your guns, but there's a lot of wasted space. Well, the company called Lockdown is coming out with a variety of accessories that you can stick to the door as the door closes, so you can fill some of that void space and put magazines and other things on the door in that void space between the door and the front of the shelving. And then they also have pistol racks and a variety of other things. So just be watching or the store. I would imagine within the next month we're going to be carrying that product. And just another that came out of the NRA show. They'd started sending out inquiries to people who attended the NRA show, and I just got a hold of one of their representatives, and it's a pretty new line of products, but it's going to be very valuable in the sense that it's going to enable you to maximize the storage space inside your safes. In addition, I want to remind our listeners that we have a Try It Before You Buy It program down at the range. It gives you the opportunity to come down to the range and try a gun or two to see if that's what you want before you buy it. The whole concept there is we've had many, many people over the last few years tell us that they went and bought a gun, and when they come to class, for example, this evening we have a basic class, they bring the gun with them. We put out 6 or 8. Up to 10 of our own guns, and by the end of the class they realize, wow, I don't like the gun that the gun that I have. I want to try one of those. Well, it's too late. They've already bought the new gun, and if they haven't fired it, some of the people we work with, particularly Old English, they've been real kind to people in making an even up trade or making sure that they get equal value on the trade-in. But once you fire a gun, it becomes a used gun, and there obviously is depreciated value in that gun. So the recommendation we have is that you come down, take the opportunity, spend the $10, and it's actually cost you $25, but $15 goes for the ammunition, so it's really only $10 for the rental of the gun. And you can try out the gun, and I recommend you try that gun and maybe compare it to something else you're considering. And we're pretty generous about that. If you've got a couple, we don't double charge you on things like that. We let you try them both. We encourage you to take a box of ammo and maybe split it between the two guns and figure out the one you like the most before you make that purchase decision. And right now, in addition to the regular supply that we have, we just recently in the last couple weeks got in the new Beretta PX4 Storm. It's not so new, but it's just new to the market because it's been slow in getting mass distributed through the through the various dealers, but the Beretta PX4 Storm and the Ruger SR 1911. Most of the companies are coming out with 45 caliber 1911 platforms because this is the 100th anniversary year of the 1911, and it's just kind of a commemorative thing, but gives you an opportunity to try that compared to, say, for example, the other one we have that's really popular, and that's the Springfield Range Officer, which is also a 1911 made by Springfield. So take the opportunity to get down there and try those guns out and see if it's something you're interested in, see if we can help you with your firearms needs. I'm going to encourage our listeners to give us a call today at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'll be more than glad to get you on the air. Mark, why don't I turn the mic over to you for a little bit and talk about maybe some of the legislative issues that are going on around the state, around the country.
Okay. Well, the in the state, let's start with that. Restoration of Rights Bill, Senate Bill 61, passed the Senate a few weeks ago, and that was it was passed by a significant margin. Then the partner bill for that, House Bill 54, was passed in the House. The problem is the two bills are just slightly different, and at least one of the two bills has to be voted on in the other chamber before it can go to the governor. So there was some discussion that that might happen during this last week. It did not, but there is now a House Committee on State Government and Elections committee meeting, which is scheduling a hearing on that bill on 1:30 on Tuesday, May 24th. That's this coming Tuesday. At 1:30 in room 116 in the House committee. So that is the first step on getting that bill passed. What that bill does is restores the rights of people who have had lost their firearms rights for whatever reason, and they have gone through the process to have their rights restored. Right now, the federal government does not recognize Ohio restoration of rights because there's just enough difference between our bill and our laws right now and the way the federal government, actually it was a Supreme Court decision that said, if you don't restore all the rights, then you don't have, as far as the federal government is concerned, they're not restored. And so that bill would change that Ohio laws to allow those who have had their rights restored in Ohio to also be recognized by the federal government. And so that is moving along. I have not heard anything this last week on the restaurant carry and car carry bills. Obviously, the House version was passed. But again, we have the same issue with the House bill and the Senate bill, that both one of those has to be heard in the other chamber and passed by that chamber before it can go to the governor for signature. He has said he will sign that bill as well. So that's something that we're waiting for and are looking forward to getting some progress and hearing the status on that. There are some other bills that are out there pending. There's one in particular in the House and the U.S. House of Representatives. It's called the National Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act of 2001. And we've been tracking that on our website for some time. When we first put it up, it had about 83 co-sponsors. It's now up to 227 co-sponsors. That's more than enough to pass in the House. So that really needs to be addressed. I think now that we've got that much interest, that much support for it in the House, I think that bill should be addressed. It should certainly get the hearings that it needs, then go to the floor of the House for a vote, and then be sent over to the Senate and let the Senate deal with it and see how they respond to that. What this bill would do is allow anyone who has a license to carry a concealed handgun, or if their state issues a permit rather than a license, it would allow them to then carry in accordance with the laws of whatever state they are in, but their license would be recognized by every state, much as your driver's license is recognized. So that would mean that as an Ohio resident, even though we do not have reciprocity with California, in fact, California doesn't issue reciprocity with anyone, it would mean that I would be able to carry based on my license when I go to California. If you are in California and you have a license to carry a concealed handgun, that would mean you'd be able to carry in Ohio, even though Ohio can't set up reciprocity with California because California won't do it. Another example, I have family in Colorado. I can't carry in Colorado. Colorado would recognize any license that recognizes their license, but Ohio will only recognize the Colorado license if there is a reciprocity agreement established and signed by someone in Colorado. Colorado doesn't have a provision for reciprocity. They just recognize any license that recognizes them. So it's kind of a catch-22. I can't carry in Colorado because Colorado won't recognize my license because Ohio won't recognize the Colorado license because Colorado doesn't have a way to recognize the Ohio license if we don't already recognize their license. It's really twisted. So that would eliminate all of those goofy things. It would also eliminate the need to have non-resident licenses, which I think is a good thing. We do have non-resident licenses from many states because they want people to be able to come to their state and be able to carry in accordance with the laws of that state. And what that would do, although you wouldn't eliminate them, you could still get a non-resident license. The non-resident license would not be included in reciprocity. So you would have to have a license from your own state. If you can't get one from your own state, then you wouldn't be able to carry in any other state. And that's a problem that you would need to deal with in your state. Fortunately, that is not the problem in Ohio because we do issue a license to anyone who's qualified. And I think that's a good thing, the shall issue system.
Well, and I think that sort of legislation certainly is going to make it more reasonable, because when you look at the differences between states and the fact that people have to check each individual state they're traveling in to make sure that, you know, they're in compliance, I mean, ultimately, once we get the national carry, I think they need to work on more standardization between states, because I don't think that these people, law-abiding citizens, shouldn't be subjected to, you know, kind of being caught in the middle of certain circumstances. If they're traveling from Ohio to Florida, they got to check Kentucky, they got to check Tennessee, they got to check Georgia, they got to check Florida. The national reciprocity, I think, should, in my estimation, be best carried to the next level, where they get more standardization among the states as far as the basic tenets that govern that. Because it doesn't matter, you know, what sense does it make to restrict a CHL holder in Ohio from going into a daycare any more than it would make them to be going into daycare in another state where currently they allow it. It just makes no sense. The potentiality of being a victim in all of these potential victim zones is equal regardless of what state you're in. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, one of the points that I typically make in our concealed carry class is that there's two places that you might be attacked. That would be in your home and not in your home.
Exactly.
And you know, what's left? There isn't anything left, and that's precisely the point.
And all we have to do is look to the circumstances surrounding incidents in society, and we see they happen everywhere.
If they do. They absolutely do. And there are examples of people being attacked in schools, in every place. I mean, churches is one of the classics that we say, oh, we don't want to have guns in churches. I mean, that's, we talked about that last week. A pastor called in to ask about that question. And I mean, I certainly understand why people say, oh, there shouldn't be a need for that.
Yep.
That's wishful thinking. Yep. And it's, although it's true there shouldn't be, there is,
it's,
and
also,
people get attacked.
It's also happened in the lobbies of government buildings, in the
Absolutely.
Marquees outside government buildings, all kinds of places. So
let's take our first break of the hour. When we come back, we'll talk to George in Brookville, who has a question for us, and we'll take your calls at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro with Shooting from the Hip, and thank you for joining us. If you'd like to join the show on the air, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here at the studio, and our producer, Mike, will get you up and put you up on the board and give us a little bit of an idea of what it is you want to talk about. And right now we already have one. Let's talk to George, who is calling in from Brookville. George, thank you very much for calling the show.
Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help you today?
Well, I've been thinking about getting something with a little longer range and reach. Back in my military days, I fired the M14, which was in 308, but, you know, the M1A is a little expensive. So I'm thinking about either an AR in 308, or I'm wondering if maybe the 6.5 Grendel wouldn't serve just as well.
Well, I think you're probably on an equal par there. I'm not real familiar with the 6.5 Grendel, but let me just tell you about the 308, and you already know this. A very, very, very great performing round, regardless of what the weapon platform that it's fired from. I was just out on the range today at the outdoor range shooting an M1A and shooting it in 308 and punching the center out of the target. And as far as getting a AR-type weapon, whether it be from Rock River or Armalite or any of the popular distributors, I think you're probably going to be best to go along those lines because those are more common. If you have any problems, you're going to have a better chance of getting parts and things of that. And plus the availability of the ammunition, 308's in abundant supply right now. So I think that would be your best bet. What are you thinking about as far as, did you have anything in particular that you were thinking about getting?
Well, I am leaning toward the Rock River 308, basically because it takes the foul magazines.
Yeah.
But, you know, I keep reading about the 6.5, and I'm you know, I know that I don't know how much the ammunition costs. If it's too expensive, it's prohibitive. But I just wanted to look, you know, to see which would be best.
Well, when you're looking at, I can just tell you right now, 308 practice ammo, you're probably, for 20 rounds, you're looking between $14 and $25, and that's a wide variation because of the different manufacturers out there. And as far as the gold match ammunition, you're probably looking between $19 and $34 for 20 rounds. So it's expensive.
Okay.
No way.
Well, my uses, you know, would basically be for, like, just target shooting or maybe even steel plate, you know?
Absolutely. And when you go out to shoot that 308, you're probably only going to shoot 20 to 40 rounds. I can't imagine you shooting a whole lot more than that. Maybe. It just depends on the circumstances. It would be better to, you know, get a case of ammunition and let that last you over a broader period of time instead of just going to the range one time and burning up 150 rounds. But I think you're probably going to be best suited to go with the 308.
I just did a quick check on one of the sites that I sometimes find deals for ammunition on. And this particular 6.5 Grendel, not the greatest stuff, but it's about 75 cents a round. So that's
high.
Yeah, that's pretty high.
Okay. Well, there's lots of surplus 308, and there's all sorts of loads for it. So, okay, that sounds like the winner.
Well, George, thanks very much for calling the show. We appreciate having you join us. If you'd like to get on the show, give us a call at 457-1290. 457-1290 will get you into the studio, and we will try to get you up on the air. We're going to take a break here in just a few seconds because it's time to go into the news center with Bill Scheidel. When we come back, we'll take your calls, and we still have a few other things that we'd like to talk about, several other things that have gone on, some lawsuits that have been filed, some interesting discussion that's been flying around the internet the last week or so. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. I want to encourage any of the callers out there, if you would like to get on the show today, give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll be more than glad to get you up on the air. I know that over the last week there's been quite a few stories going around the gun sites reference to an Indiana Supreme Court decision that I think has been misinterpreted and the applicability or application of the provision of law that was established in that decision. You know, they were trying to equate that as something that was going to be very dark for citizens. And I want to encourage listeners that if they've heard about that case, to go and actually read the case, because if you look at the facts of that case, you'll understand that most laws evolve, or most decisions evolve, as a result of fact-specific circumstances that brought the case to the court's attention.
And most of these decisions are very narrow.
That's right.
Very narrow applicability.
And this particular case, police were called to a residence in response to a 911 call from a female who said that her boyfriend or estranged husband was there and he was causing a disturbance. And the initial call came in on the hardline phone. And while they were on the phone, he actually ripped the phone out of the wall, forcing her to go back and lock herself in another place in the house. And she ended up making a secondary call, 911, to the police on her cell phone. The police responded to the residence. By the time they got there, the husband said he was going to leave. There was some verbal exchange going on between the husband and the wife. The police were trying to sort through the circumstances. The husband decided at the last minute that he wasn't going to leave. Instead, he was going to go back into the house. The police had not yet stabilized the situation. They tried to follow him into the house. He tried to block their access. They told them that they can't do that. They got to make sure that the female half is okay. And they were going to come in and talk with her, and then they would leave after they are assured that everything's all right. He resisted arrest. He put up a scuffle. He, in fact, engaged in a physical altercation with the officers, and he was arrested. Now, the apparently one of the major issues before the court was whether or not an individual has the right to resist unlawful entry. And in a pretty sweeping opinion, the majority in this particular case said that Indiana residents do not have the authority to resist even unlawful entry of police officers into residences. And the reasoning they gave is that, number one, it limits the law enforcement investigative abilities in cases like the one they were investigating here. And secondly, they put a lot of weight on the fact that it provokes additional violence. Now, there's been some commentary about this particular decision, and one was on Fox News with Judge Napolitano the other day, where he made statements that I think a lot of people reacted to when he said that I think his exact words were, the Indiana Supreme Court gives police officers the authority not only to write their search warrants, but then to serve their own search warrants, and kind of left it at that. When in fact, just as is the case around the country, we as police officers, we actually write the search warrants based on facts and circumstances that we gather in our investigations. So we actually write the language, and there are certain things that we have to show. We have to show that particular items of evidence of criminal activity are being housed at a particular location during a very specified period of time. And then we can't just go serve the search warrant. We have to take that to a neutral and detached magistrate or judge who then looks at all the facts and circumstances and stamps it okay to go ahead and serve, or says, no, you don't have enough yet, you're going to have to go conduct an additional investigation. So there's absolutely no truth to the fact that the Illinois or Indiana Supreme Court gave police officers the authority to write and serve their own search warrants. And again, a lot of people just react on, you know, he carries a lot of weight. When he comes on TV, people look at his opinion as being authoritative, and I'm sure he's a great individual and a very knowledgeable individual. But I will tell you, in this particular case, if you go back and read the facts of the case, and you look at or listen to what he said, it was inaccurate. And it was the inaccurate information that he conveyed to the audience that I think provoked a lot of the responses, because people were putting the 2 or 3 minute oratory he had on Fox News as a little thing you could click up and listen to. And then there were some comments afterward. And that caused a lot of the confusion in this particular case. And as a 25-year law enforcement officer, I will tell you that I don't, as a law enforcement officer, I believe in our system of justice. Just the other day, I gave a presentation in a government class. The instructor asked me to come in and talk about how which amendments apply to law enforcement. And I talked to them about the 4th, the 5th, the 6th, and the 8th amendments, and how they apply to the criminal justice systems and the inner workings of the criminal justice systems. And I said that with those checks and balances in place, that makes ours the best country to live in. And having those amendments to the Constitution, having a Constitution the way we do, those are the checks and balances that are in place to prevent, you know, tyrannical rule of our society. And as a law enforcement officer, even though there have been, I can cite numerous cases in the 25 years where those rules have caused me to go to great lengths to do my job better. But you know what? That's how it has to be, and that's how it should be. And that's a good thing. So I don't want it to where we can write our own search warrants and just go ahead and serve them anytime, and we can walk in and say, do you have drugs? Do you have guns? Are you doing this? Are you doing that? We have a system in place. It's working very well. I'd just like to see us enforce some of our laws that are already on the books and do the things that we have to do to take care of some of the problems. But in reference to that particular issue, I just wanted to alert the listening audience that pay particular attention to the facts of that case, the very narrow scope of that decision, the narrow application of that decision. Again, that was referring to Indiana residents not having the authority to restrict unlawful entry of police. It doesn't have applicability in Ohio. Now, certainly other courts can look to courts' decisions as precedent and saying, well, look what they're doing in Indiana, look what they're doing in Illinois. But nonetheless, it doesn't have direct applicability in our state, so don't rush to judgment.
Let's go out to the phones, Jeff, and we'll talk to Ben in Dayton, who's called the show. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yes.
How you doing? My question is pretty much just what are the laws concerning carrying in the car or open carry?
Okay.
For that matter?
Well, all right. There's really two different questions, I think. There's open carry is one thing, and then carry in a car is something different, and they overlap a little bit. But
well, my question was pretty much what is the overlap right there? What do you need to do once you get from open to into your car?
Okay, if you are carrying openly, you cannot carry in your car except if you have a license to carry concealed handgun. So
okay.
you can carry openly in your car if you have a license to carry concealed handgun. If you don't, then you need to unload the firearm and put it in a case or put it in a trunk that can't be, or some compartment that can't be accessed from in the vehicle.
Okay.
And on the definition of unloaded is that you must remove obviously all the ammunition from the firearm itself, but then you must also unload any magazines or speed loaders that can be used with that weapon. So that's the current definition. There was at one time in Ohio law before 2008 a provision that said you could have the ammunition just could not be ready at hand. And sometimes people would separate the two by as far apart as they could put them in the car. That doesn't work anymore. It really never worked that well because it wasn't a bright line definition. Now we know exactly what the definition is, and you have to have the firearm unloaded, no ammunition in the firearm, plus no ammunition in any magazines or speed loaders that can be used with that firearm anywhere in the vehicle.
I want to also add to that that particular provision of law has absolutely no applicability. It doesn't do any good at all by having those provisions. And let me just give you this example. It only hurts a law-abiding citizen that decides to load his magazines up or wanted to load his magazines up before he runs down to the range and spends his hour on the range so he doesn't have to waste range time loading his mags, because, quite frankly, the bad guys never pay attention to the laws. So the fact that they can have loaded magazines ready at hand in guns, wherever it's at, it doesn't stop them. They're going to load their guns and carry their illegally possessed guns anyway. So that particular provision of law, as a law enforcement officer, I'm telling you from a practical standpoint, it does nothing but curtail and inconvenience law-abiding people when they're on their way to the range. That's the way I see it, because over the years I've seen the evolution of this law. I was actually a police officer in Illinois for 3 years, so I saw how things worked there also. And this particular
or didn't work
actually, absolutely. And this particular provision of law does us no good. As a law enforcement officer, it does us no good.
And that opinion is brought to you by Jeff Pedro from Sim Trainer. what he's saying is absolutely true. Unfortunately, that is the way the law is written, and it is better than what it was before, because there was this gray area that says, okay, how far do they have to be apart before it's not considered ready at hand? And so that was a problem, and in fact, it got some people in trouble doing exactly what they thought they should be able to do, using a case that was designed to carry the magazines, designed to carry the gun, and put them all in there and zipped up, and it was put away, and that should have been correct, but the way that the law was written, one person decided, well, that is what I'm going to call ready at hand. And so they ended up being charged, and it went to the Ohio Supreme Court. And they ruled that, said, well, that's what the law says. If you don't like it, change it. And so the legislature did change it. I personally don't like the way it is now, but I think it's important that we tell you the way it really is to give you the straight scoop so that you're not left in that accidental felon mode.
The other issue that comes up when this issue is raised is this whole concept of open carry versus concealed carry. And I just want to tell you, at Sim Trainer, we recommend concealed carry. It provides you with a tactical advantage. I don't really see a whole lot of applicability. If you can possess the gun, you can go through the training and you can get the license so that you can carry it concealed. It gives you a tactical advantage. Plus, it doesn't draw unnecessary negative attention to you. And even, let's face it, our society hasn't quite made the transition to where guns are kind of commonplace and regular. I think we're evolving to that, and I hope it happens in my lifetime to where people don't think guns are bad and they don't feel uncomfortable. Just as when I was a very young child, I knew that I shouldn't touch the guns that relatives of mine had, and that they were used for hunting and sporting purposes and for self-defense, and there were rules in place, and they were only under direct supervision could you handle those things. So we'll evolve to that, but until then, I don't see any benefit for the open carry, so I don't know that there's a whole lot of argument that can be made in favor. Personal opinion again.
Ben, does that answer your question?
Yeah, very much so. Thank you.
Thanks for giving the show a call. We're going to have to take a break here as the last break of the show. So before we go out to Fred and Dayton, we'll do that and pay a few bills. I do want to remind folks that On the 30th, which is the Monday, the Memorial Day holiday, Shooting from the Hip is going to be on the radio in the morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio WHIO. So if you are going to be out and about that morning, if you have your radio turned on, or maybe you're just chilling out a little bit, getting ready for some of the activities of that day, tune in to the radio and listen to us that morning at, from 8 to 9 o'clock on Monday, Memorial Day. Let's take our last break of the hour, pay a few bills. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and now 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on AM 1290 and 95.7 FM, News Talk Radio, WHIO.
And welcome back to Shooting from the Hip. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro. Let's go right out to the phones, and we'll talk to Fred in Dayton, who has a question. Fred, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I have two very quick questions.
Okay.
The first is, I was unloading some furniture from my truck about a year ago, and this woman saw my concealed carry under my shirt, and it just freaked her out. I thought she was going to go in and call the police, even though I was simply moving furniture. I'm newly listening to your show. I heard the gentleman, one of you, saying earlier about having concealing your open carrying your in your car. But just on that piece, just comment on that. The other one is about having concealed carry or guns where there are alcohol.
Okay.
I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Personally, I just don't think it's a good mix where you have people, you have bad guys who walk in with guns, you have tempers, drinking, all this kind of stuff going on, and it just scares the bejeebies out of me. And I'm aware of Luby's Restaurant, I think, back in the 90s.
Right.
Texas, whereby this woman who had her firearm in her car when she watched both her parents get shot to death by someone.
That's Susanna Gracia Hupp.
Excuse me?
Susanna Gracia Hupp. She was for some time a Texas state legislator, and she has been a strong advocate of concealed carry and improving and restoring the right to keep and bear arms and removing the restrictions that the states put on. Let me try to answer your questions, because we're going to run out of time here pretty soon. As far as concealed carry is concerned, if you have a license to carry a concealed handgun, that does not require you to keep it concealed. We recommend that for a lot of reasons, and the one that you experienced is a really classic example where somebody sees the gun and freaks out. I mean, there's just no point in us freaking people out unnecessarily. On the other hand, it's not illegal for it to be shown. You haven't done any violation of the law, and even if she had called the police, that wouldn't by itself cause a problem, and they would certainly understand. Obviously, they would probably say, you know, try to keep your shirt pulled down, but obviously if you're moving stuff around, that's a possibility of things to happen. So there's no violation of law there, at least not in Ohio. In Florida and in Texas, that would be a real problem, but it's not here. And as far as the restaurant carry is concerned, understand that anybody who has a license to carry a concealed handgun and goes into a restaurant that serves alcohol after the law changes, they would be prohibited from consuming liquor. So we're not talking about mixing guns and alcohol. We're talking about allowing people who are responsible citizens and have chosen to be part of the armed lifestyle to defend themselves and their family and their loved ones from bad things happening. They would not be stripped of that ability to do that just because they went to some place like an Applebee's or a Longhorn Steakhouse or some place that serves alcohol, even though they're not consuming themselves. So I understand the argument, and I've certainly heard it all the time. That argument was made many times on the floor of the House, and frankly, it didn't win the day. And I'm sort of glad, because I would like to be able to go to those places, and leaving the gun unattended in my motor vehicle when I go in there is probably not the best answer.
That is true. Thank you for your time.
The other thing to remember, and this is so true, way back before the concealed carry law initially passed in 2004, people said when the law passes, there's going to be violence in the streets. That never happened, and we just simply have to rely on law-abiding citizens to do the right thing and obey the laws like they have all along.
Let's go real quick back out to the phones, because Dennis has got a classic question, 9mm versus 45. We've got about 15 seconds left. What's your question on that, or your point on that, Dennis?
I was just wanting to know the pros and cons Okay. From your opinion.
All right. They are both great firearms for personal defense, and the whole argument about whether to go with 9 or 45 is really personal preference, because as far as ballistic performance, they are both very excellent. You sacrifice magazine capacity when you go to the larger round of the 45, but they both work well. Thanks very much for calling the show. We're out of time. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting From the Hip.